Headlines: Iran once again criticizes the IAEA for politicizing its nuclear program under Israeli pressure. The European Human Rights Court issues a last-minute injunction stopping the UK's controversial plan to send asylum seekers to Rwanda. And Russia tells Ukrainian forces hold up at a chemical plant in the city of Severodonetsk to lay down their arms and surrender.
Hello and welcome. Your world news coming to you live from our headquarters in Tehran. My name is Gisum Shahmadi.
The head of the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran has criticized the International Atomic Energy Agency for politicizing Iran's nuclear program under Israel's pressure, despite extensive cooperation from Tehran.
The IAEA has time and again inspected Iranian nuclear sites and found no diversion in the country's nuclear program. I hope the agency is freed from the grip of the Zionist regime and stops politically motivated measures to prevent the reputation and credibility of the IAEA and its director general from being harmed further.
Mohammad Islami was speaking a week after the IAEA Board of Governors adopted a resolution accusing Iran of failing to fully cooperate with the agency. Islami rejected, saying the allegation had been orchestrated by Israel to impede Iran's nuclear progress. He said Iran provided the agency with clarifications regarding its nuclear activities as part of trust-building measures. The IAEA resolution was submitted by the U.S., the U.K., Germany, and France. Iran's foreign minister has said the U.S. pushed for the resolution to gain more concessions in talks over the 2015 deal.
Despite continued indirect messages between Tehran and Washington, as well as progress made in the talks, the U.S. unexpectedly submitted a resolution at the IAEA to put political pressure on the Islamic Republic and to gain more concessions in the indirect negotiations. Although the U.S. had informed Iran that the resolution was empty of content, the U.S. itself prompted Tehran to issue a stern warning to Washington over such measure. Iran put forward a new political package, a new initiative to the negotiating table. The U.S. had welcomed the initiative, but at the same time pushed for the resolution.
Amir Abdullahian said that Iran, in a reaction to the U.S. move, increased its nuclear activities at some sites. He added that the U.N. nuclear watchdog has been informed about these activities. The top diplomat underlined, however, that despite the recent resolution, Tehran will continue the talks aimed at reviving the 2015 deal until a good, strong, and lasting accord is reached. Political analyst Said Mohsen Abbas joined us earlier to give us his thoughts on the recent anti-Iran stance by the IAEA.
Problematic. I mean, first of all, you know, to call a press conference straight after 27 cameras are removed by Iran, given that Rossi knows and the IAEA knows that that's still not in violation of the JCPOA, Iranians still have 40 cameras operating on their sites. Whatever they were doing in terms of those extra cameras was their goodwill. They weren't part of the JCPOA agreement. So for Rossi to sort of play such a big drama with this press conference tells you straight away what the intentions of the IAEA. They're over-dramatizing it based on instructions they're receiving from Tel Aviv and, of course, Washington. And I think that they've really seriously compromised their position. You know, the Iranians, of course, are openly now saying that this whole report is in fact prepared by Israel and it's a fake and fabricated affair. And they've taken official exception to the IAEA chief Rafael Grossi's visit to Israel just days before the meeting itself. So, you know, that's yet another very, very curious thing for a neutral body like the IAEA to do, to go and meet a nation which has nuclear weapons, you know, for guarantee. You know, some say well up above 200 to 400, and yet they are not part of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. They're not inspected by the IAEA in any way. And they, oh yes, they happen to be the main objector to Iran's peaceful nuclear development.
Iran's presence says closer ties between Tehran and Islamabad will bring more security and economic prosperity for regional countries. Ebrahim Raisi, in a meeting with a visiting Pakistani foreign minister, said that certain parties are opposed to stronger ties between Iran and Pakistan as two Muslim neighbor countries. He, however, said that there is no limit on how much Iran can develop its relations with Pakistan. The Iranian president says Tehran is ready to boost cooperation with Islamabad and has the capacity to meet Pakistan's demands for oil, natural gas, and electricity. Raisi underlined energy transportation and coordination on regional issues and the crises as the most significant aspects of cooperation between Iran and its eastern neighbor. The U.S. Advisor for Energy Security, Amos Hoschen, has met Lebanese officials in Beirut. The Lebanese officials said their country has the right to defend its natural resources in a maritime dispute with Israel. Mariam Sally reports.
Senior U.S. Advisor for Energy Security Amos Hochstein met high-ranking Lebanese officials in Beirut. During the talks, Lebanese officials said conditions for talks are confidential, but stressed their main demand is Lebanon maintain its right to defend its natural resources.
For the Lebanese government, the point 29 will be considered as a negotiation point, and the 23 point will be considered as the realistic point that will draw the Lebanese borders over the sea.
The conflict over petrol and gas fields began more than 10 years ago when the U.S. proposed a so-called Hof Line, which is lower than Line 23, stripping Lebanon of some 860 square kilometers. President Michel Aoun, Prime Minister Mikati, and Speaker Nabih Berri all stressed a unified stance for Lebanon that the country will not concede its right to begin drilling offshore.
Because of the American embargo over on Lebanon, we cannot drill for our rights to extract our gas and oil because we have to be delayed until the Israeli and the Zionist entity to extract their wealth before us. Therefore, the American negotiator is taken aside, and it's very obvious that they are not negotiating for our benefit, but for the benefit of our enemy.
A recent move by Israel to attempt drilling in the Karish field, which falls within Line 29, has led to opposition from Beirut. Hezbollah Secretary General Said Hassan Nasrallah has also warned the floating petrol company Energean against drilling in that area as long as it is disputed, and also cautioned that Israeli drilling could reach depths closer to potentially gas-rich Lebanese fields. Lebanon's main dilemma now is that time is running out and its natural resources could be looted at any time. Analysts believe the officials need to firstly demand that the U.S. lift its undeclared blockade and allow contracted companies to implement their obligations and drill in purely Lebanese fields. Mariam Saleh, Beirut.
Britain's first flight to take asylum seekers to Rwanda is canceled after the European Rights Court issued last-minute injunctions to stop the deportation of a handful of migrants on board. Shortly before the plane was due to leave, the European Court of Human Rights moved to prevent their deportation. The British government now says that it will not be deterred and it will prepare for the next flight. The plan to send some migrants to the East African country has been criticized by some rights groups and international bodies. The United Nations refugee chief has called it catastrophic. The government has been forced to fight a series of legal challenges in London courts to stop it from going ahead. Britain says that the plan will stem from the flow of dangerous sea trips to the country. And Iran joins a growing crowd of critics of Britain's plan to send asylum seekers to Rwanda. Tehran says the plan is a historic disgrace to London and all of those who try to mask their imperialistic record. Iran's foreign ministry said the forced transfer of asylum seekers to a third country is a clear violation of their human rights. Sheikh Khatibzadeh said the silence of countries who proclaim to be defenders of human rights on this issue is also a shame. The ministry said the plan sets a dangerous precedent that threatens to destroy the international regime for protection of asylum seekers. The Iranian spokesman said the rights of these asylum seekers, who also include some Iranians, must be observed. 5 years ago, devastating fire ripped through a London Tower block, killing 72, mostly ethnic minority men, women, and children. Despite an ongoing injury and numerous government pledges regarding building safety, residents and survivors of the Grenfell say another catastrophe is possible unless immediate action is taken.
The community and wider supporters gathered to remember the victims of the Grenfell inferno 5 years on. Many had gathered in the shadow of the building that still stands as a constant reminder of June 14th, when an inferno engulfed the tower block, leaving scores dead and thousands of others impacted and the nation traumatized. Dignitaries, including politicians and royalty, paid their respects, and for all the acts of heroism during the blaze and in its aftermath, the scars still run deep.
From my perspective, I feel like it's like a Muslim tragedy in London because of the high number of Muslims that were living here, because it was during Ramadan, because of the impact that it's had on the local community. The very first person who was named was a Somalian Muslim out of the list of people who had died in Grenfell. And I think the continuation of our story right now has to be on recognising the impact it had on the community here and what more can we do now.
The reoccurring theme when you speak with people here is the sense of frustration and anger at the way in which survivors, victims, the community, members of their family were all treated and continue to be treated. The pledges that were made, the promises that were broken, and the spectre of another Grenfell being possible.
The official Grenfell inquiry, chaired by Sir Martin Moore-Bick, that so far lasted 4 years and cost £149 million and counting, is attempting to figure out what truly happened and who was responsible. Those still fighting for answers are clear about what justice will mean in this case.
Justice will look like the fact that those people, the leaseholders, people in social housing, you know, in high-rise blocks, are living in habitable, affordable, safe homes. That is what justice will look like on one hand, and on the other hand, as I've said before, justice should look like those who are accountable for, who are responsible for this atrocity, are held accountable.
What I would like to ask this government is, what is it going to take for them to start taking this issue seriously? Is it because the people who died on Grenfell Tower on that night were mostly working class people, were mostly people of colour? Because we know that had Grenfell been in Canary Wharf, that building would not have been covered in illegal flammable cladding. It's utterly outstanding that we're 5 years on, we still have no answers. This community has received no justice, and still there are residents in this country that are living in buildings covered in the same illegal flammable cladding that was wrapped around Grenfell Tower.
Ahead of any official findings, the community of Grenfell march. They remember, and they will continue the fight for answers and justice. Amina Taylor, London.
Russia says it will open a humanitarian corridor to allow civilians encircled in a chemical plant in the eastern city of Severodonetsk to leave the area. The Russian Defense Ministry said the civilians will be evacuated to Lugansk region, which is being controlled by the pro-Russian forces. The Russian military has called on Ukrainian troops in Severodonetsk to lay down their arms and stop their senseless resistance. Local Ukrainian officials say some 500 people have been seeking shelter in the chemical plant and are under heavy fire. The developments came after Russia destroyed all three bridges which connect Severodonetsk to the nearby city of Lysychansk. The Russian forces are currently controlling 70 to 80% of the eastern Donbass region. Capturing it would enable Moscow to seize another key area in its push to conquer Donbass. Ukraine says it has received only 10% of the weapons it has requested from the West. Deputy Defense Minister Anna Maliar said in a televised speech that her country cannot win the war with Russia without the help of the West, no matter how hard it tries. She said deadlines must be set for arms deliveries or else Ukraine would be risking losing its territory to Russia. The calls were echoed by the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, who says his country needs modern anti-missile weapons now. He says there could be no justification for delaying their deliveries. Russia has already warned Western arms in Ukraine are fair game for its strikes. Russia has banned dozens of British journalists from entering the country in the latest series for tit-for-tat measures in response to Western sanctions. Moscow says it is blacklisting nearly 50 British citizens, over half of them journalists. The Russian Foreign Ministry says those blacklisted are involved in deliberate dissemination of false and one-sided information about Russia and the developments in Ukraine. Less than half of those on the list are defense figures. The Foreign Ministry says those people are responsible for supplying Western arms to Ukraine. Russia had promised to retaliate Western sanctions, which includes bans on Russian media overseas. In March, Britain's media regulator revoked the Russia-based RT channel's license to broadcast.
And now with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
In Britain, a well-known Conservative donor has said he cannot support Prime Minister Boris Johnson after accusing him of overseeing an unconservative government, delivering a pathetic tax-cutting pledge and refusing to heed calls to change the course of his premiership. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Observer's policy editor Michael Savage. The piece is titled, "Tory Donors and Polarised Party Losing Faith in Johnson Cult." In Britain, a well-known Conservative donor has said he cannot support Prime Minister Boris Johnson after accusing him of overseeing an unconservative government, delivering a pathetic tax-cutting pledge and refusing to heed calls to change the course of his premiership. With the Prime Minister facing a split over Brexit within days and a mounting revolt among party backers after last week's humiliating confidence vote, the hotelier Sirocco Forte said he will not put up with the direction that Boris Johnson is taking the Conservative Party. He told The Observer that Johnson has mishandled the Partygate scandal and been badly damaged by last Monday's confidence vote, in which 148 MPs opposed the Prime Minister. However, in a sign of wider despair over the performance of Johnson's administration, Sirocco Forte said that it was simply not a Conservative government. He was elected to deliver Brexit and win an election, which he did. And he's probably the only person who could have done it in the way it was done, he said. But those of us who supported him expected him to build a competent team around him, as he did when he was Mayor of London, and govern effectively. That just hasn't happened. And the reality of this government is that it's not a Conservative government. If you're running a business, you don't feel this government is behind you in any way. That's what a Conservative government is supposed to be about. Unless he changes tack and does something about that, which doesn't look likely because he suggested he's doing all the things that need to be done already, I don't think people on the right of the Conservative Party like me will put up with this. Unless I see a change, I don't feel I can support him into the future. I supported a Conservative government. Unless I see a Conservative government, what's the point of supporting it? Sirocco Forte handed Boris Johnson £100,000 for the last election campaign. Worryingly for Johnson, other donors are also losing faith. But there are competing views on how the Prime Minister should fix things. John Caldwell, the billionaire founder of Phones for You, who gave the Tories £500,000 before the last election, would not state if Johnson should go, but called for more investment. John Caldwell said, "Rather than prudence, we need to borrow on an unprecedented scale and invest wisely, productively and profitably," he said, pointing to renewable energy, infrastructure, subsidies for industry and apprenticeships. It comes as a former Conservative Party chairman, Chris Patten, said the party was in the grip of the Johnson cult, with cabinet ministers unwilling to turn on him. The party was in the midst of a very long nervous breakdown. Lord Patten added, "We don't have a Conservative government at all, but an English nationalist party which is populist, but, fatally, without being popular." Unease among donors and grandees is another sign that, despite relative calm among MPs since last Monday's vote, Boris Johnson remains on unstable ground. A confrontation is already building over Brexit. On Monday, the government published its plans to effectively override the Northern Ireland Protocol, the section of the Brexit deal with the European Union governing the region. While the government has been trying to reassure MPs that the proposals will not reignite Brexit tensions, The Observer has been told by multiple sources that the government's bill still includes sections that override the Northern Ireland Protocol agreed with the European Union, a move that critics say is illegal and will spark a rebellion. One Conservative source said the government is lying to its own MPs and the media about the illegal focus of this bill. The Tory party is sleepwalking into a repeat of the Owen Paterson vote and Partygate, yet again positioning the party full square in support of law-breaking over the rule of law. It is understood that the key legal advice was not presented to the Cabinet Committee overseeing the plans. The Observer has established that Thomas D. Grant, an academic lawyer who worked in the US State Department during the Donald Trump administration and has written legal articles supporting a hard Brexit, has been advising on the bill. White House sources, however, said he offered advice and was not a central part of the legal team. There have been frantic legal and political negotiations taking place between Boris Johnson, his cabinet and MPs in the past week. Boris Johnson had been pressed to take a hard line and effectively override the Northern Ireland Protocol. It creates a major flashpoint for Johnson. Some pro-Brexit MPs, including some in the European Research Group, ERG, that caused persistent problems for Johnson's predecessor, Theresa May, could withdraw their support for him if the plans are seen as too weak. However, moderate Conservatives are also threatening to rebel if they deem that the legislation breaks international law. A European research group source laughed off the idea that they had a Machiavellian plot to take control of the Conservative Party by holding Johnson to ransom. They said that it was most important to ensure the European Court of Justice did not oversee Britain's laws. There have already been signs that as the immediate impact of the COVID pandemic recedes, clashes over Brexit are reopening. Mark Jenkinson, the Conservative MP for Workington, told the Daily Mail that lefties, lords and loveys were showing they still did not accept the referendum result. The Daily Mail also claimed in an essay that a remainder counter-revolution has begun and replacing Boris Johnson could lead to the reversal of Brexit.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and here is a brief but bright statement from Imam Ali ibn Musa al-Reza, peace be upon him. Fear the believer's insight, for in seeing things he is assisted by the light of Allah.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Thank you.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's topic, the hidden beauty. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. No doubt every one of us has experienced that when we see a fruit or a nut, we see that it has a shell, it has a protective shell on it. It has a wall that covers that fruit and goodness which is hidden inside that fruit. Have you ever thought why there is this shell around this goodness? Have you ever thought that why the fruit has a wall around it? Why it has naturally built a shelter for itself? No doubt that it's because the risks, the environmental harsh conditions, and the dangers which risk its inner goodness. That's why it has built such a cover, such a shelter for itself in the nature, to face the threats and dangers which are there in the nature. So it builds such a shelter for itself. And we know that that shelter is stiff, it's hard to penetrate. Maybe you need some time, if you want to enjoy a nut, you need a stone to break that shelter, that nut, to reach that goodness which is hidden inside it. And it's a natural phenomenon, you know. It's a natural phenomenon that when we see in the society, we find that such a reality and such a phenomenon also resonates, and it's also present in our own human society. We see people around us, we see ourselves, and when we deal with them in the first glance, in the first meeting, we find them like there is a personality which seems to be harsh, which seems to be like a shelter, which seems to be like a wall between you and that personality. When you deal with people, you find that they are different from you and they look to be harsh with you in their dealing, when they speak to you, when they are dealing with you. But when you think and when you find and when you slowly think about them, you will find that this harsh and this negative approach towards others is result of the harsh environmental surroundings and the harsh environmental conditions where people are in a kind of a clash between the interests. So this phenomenon is a result of the hard human conditions, hard human society conditions where there are threats to interests. Welcome back. You are listening to A to Z. We are talking about the hidden beauty. And we started by giving an example of the nut with a hard and firm shell and firm shelter. And inside that shelter, there is a goodness. There is a soft goodness hidden inside that shelter. We talked that humans are also like this reality. They also have a hidden beauty inside them. Every man on the earth, every person on the earth has a beauty and a goodness inside him. But there is a shelter, there is a wall, which naturally he develops such a wall. Psychologically, he develops such a wall to face the dangers, to protect himself from the threats of other people. Because in the course of his life, he has seen such a threats and dangers which come to him from other people. So he has naturally built such a shell and wall to protect himself. But if you make another person safe, make feel him safe about you, himself from your side, if you make himself in a kind of feeling of safety regarding you, then he will open himself up from that shelter. And you will find that inside that shelter, inside that cover, there is a beautiful personality hidden there. And when we will meet that personality, when you meet the real personality which is hidden inside that wall, you will find how beautiful that personality is. And it's a reality about most of the people you met in your life. When you give up the prejudice, when you leave all kind of the assumptions and negativity, and when you meet people with such a positive mind, when you meet people with this perspective that they are inside very good, they are within inside, there is a goodness hidden in them, there is a beauty hidden in them, gradually you will find and you will see that how people will look beautiful and they will look great and they will look very interesting to you. And your perspective about many people in life will change. So this is even has been told in the Islamic teaching that we should look with positivity towards the people. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z on IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. To find out more about this program, log on to our website parstoday.com/EN, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
News, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Another breakthrough in the world of science. Japanese scientists move one step closer to creating lifelike robots by changing their physical appearance. Researchers at the University of Tokyo have developed living skin on a robotic finger. To that aim, they have submerged the robot's finger into a cylinder filled with a mixture of the natural skin components. The lab-grown skin is water-repellent, has wrinkles, and can heal itself. A member of the research team explains how the innovation will be helpful in the future. Let's take a listen.
As for challenges in the future, since we've only produced a simple skin, we would like to add various sensory organs such as the nervous system and the vascular system. We would like to further improve the function of the skin. Once we complete that, I believe that the skin itself could be used for transplantation, or use the skin as a model to develop cosmetics or drugs, or for leather products that do not require harming the animal, or to cover prosthetic limbs and legs.
The lab-grown skin is much weaker than the natural type. It's unable to survive long without nutrient supply and waste removal. For now, the team plans to address those issues and also include more sophisticated features. They want to add hair follicles, sweat glands, and sensory neurons to the skin. Five young and rare Bonelli's eagles born on a breeding farm in France are taking a journey to Spain, where they will be released into the wild. These eaglets were born in captivity, which is a rare feat for these endangered species. Three of the five are ready to be released and have been fitted with GPS microchips for tracking purposes. Their initial release date was delayed because of several weeks of bird flu, which made traveling impossible. The other two eagles are too young to be reintroduced and are still being hand-fed from behind the curtain. They will make the journey sometime in July. The breeders, however, are worried about how to sustain the program as their birds begin to age.
The Bonelli's eagle is a species that is relatively scarce. In France, we must have about 40 couples, something like that, who produce about 20 chicks per year. Here, we have 5 chicks, but my birds are very old. Still, 5 chicks is not nothing for a species which relies on a small reproduction number.
Pacto also says his five pairs of eagles are aged between 18 and 30 years, and three of them are now too old to breed. He says the number of Bonelli's eagles had dropped dramatically since the 1980s, mainly to electrocution on high-voltage lines. Due to the reintroduction program, the population of these eagles has nearly doubled over the past two decades. A Belgian company is trying to combat urban waste by transforming used coffee grounds into edible mushrooms that can also be used in construction. The mycelium is grown in a damp cellar in Brussels. Some 5 tons of coffee grounds are collected each month from partner cafes. They are then mixed in drums where the oyster mushroom spores are added and mixed with straw in a sack. The mushrooms emerge from slashes in the sacks 15 days afterwards and are ready to be sent to shops for sales. The business owners say they are looking to expand their business and use coffee and mushrooms as an environmentally friendly alternative to plastic.
Each day we throw away a lot of coffee, and this coffee to be produced needs a lot of energy from the cultivation to the transportation to Europe, and it's just a pity not to use it more than a few minutes to drink a coffee.
The company has already tested out its fungus-based insulating tiles and received its first order of these tiles for soundproofing purposes. Jacket says they hope to produce 12 tons of the mycelium material per month when they gather enough investment. The business owner says there is no shortage of raw material as coffee is widely consumed in Belgium. Jacket says the innovation can dramatically cut down on plastic waste.
China launches 3 astronauts to its Tiangong space station as its construction enters a critical phase. The 3 blasted off from a launch center in northwestern China. They are the second group of astronauts to head to the space station since its construction began in April 2021. They will stay there for 6 months. The space station is planned as a 3-section structure. The core module was launched in April, and 2 more components will be sent into space in July and September. The new mission will oversee the integration of the 3 parts. The crew's commander has described the task as a pivotal battle in the construction of Tiangong, which is planned to be completed by the end of 2022.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Colombia's long hunt for a fabled Spanish ship, San Jose Galleon, that sank centuries ago, comes to an end. But the mission leads to 2 more nearby shipwrecks filled with treasures.
We have found 2 additional ships, one ship that is from the colonial period and another that, from the point of view of preliminary analysis, corresponds to the Republican period of our history. We also have related vessels, around 12 similar boats, that will be located by our Navy.
The colonial-era vessels were found near Colombia's Caribbean port of Cartagena. A remotely operated vehicle reached 900 meters beneath to capture the shipwrecks and treasures inside them. San Jose Galleon sank in a deadly battle against English warships in 1708, taking with it billions in treasure. The Colombian president says the findings will be preserved and protected until extraction is done completely. The riches will then be displayed in museums.
Colombian scientists managed to reproduce an endangered species of frog, bringing it back from the brink of extinction. The scientists were able to reproduce 29 specimens of Lehman's poison frog after years of investigations and experiments using a lab built specifically for this species. They have released the frogs into the Colombian Pacific region with the hope of starting its repopulation.
We observe how the frogs adapt to this ecosystem, which is theirs, but it is a constant monitoring. And the idea is that of these first 29 frogs at the moment, there will be many more little frogs, and now we can tell the world that they are not in danger of extinction.
The scientists, however, warn that this particular species of frog is very difficult to reproduce or maintain under human care. They are also worried about the illegal trade of the frogs, which has already played a key role in pushing the rare species towards extinction. Colombia is home to over 700 frog species, more than any other country in the world except Brazil.
Chinese scientists are establishing a meteorological monitoring station at an altitude of 8,800 meters on Mount Komolangma, the world's highest peak on the China-Nepal border. The 13 members of the research team started the trek towards an 8,300-meter base camp on Mount Komolangma from a 7,028-meter camp on Tuesday morning. They reached the camp in the afternoon and went on the last section of the arduous journey up on Wednesday morning. If the station is established successfully, it will replace the one at an altitude of 8,430 meters set up by the British and U.S. scientists on the mountains in 2019. It will be the world's highest of its kind, according to the Chinese Academy of Sciences.
A bridge too scary for many, but just the right place for those with a head for heights. Vietnam has opened the world's longest glass bottom bridge to the public.
The now recorded longest glass bottom cliffside pathway, and it's spectacular. The engineering required to build that into the side of a cliff but maintain all the features of nature, the greenery, the rock, has been an amazing project, very successful, and I think it will attract a lot of tourists.
The White Dragon Suspension Bridge fittingly opened with a dragon dance. The structure is longer than the previous record holder in China and has two sections. One stretches over 630 meters between two mountains, while the other runs around a cliffside. Visitors can look straight down at the valley 150 meters below. The structure is safe and made from three layers of 40 millimeter tempered glass. The contemporary ceramics exhibition kicks off at the Villa d'Atres Art Foundation near the French city of Avignon. The exhibit showcases nearly 130 artworks of all sizes. Some are so big they are put on display outdoors. The foundation has curated these modern forms from roughly 100 artists from all over the world. The exhibit displays an exceptional diversity of eclectic works presenting sophisticated skills and artistry. Participating artists say working with clay and playing with glazes always produces a unique item that often generates a profoundly universal reaction. The goal of the event is to show how ceramic art has returned to the forefront of the contemporary art scene.
A man in the city of Soran in Iraq's autonomous Kurdistan region has become a local celebrity for a rather peculiar feature on his face. Hussein Abdullah Ahmed is famous for a record-breaking length of his mustache. Ahmed has been going by the name Mr. Mustache for decades now. His mustache has reached a length of 2.4 meters, making him a well-known man in the city he hails from. His son says, however, that his father's unusual feature is nothing new for him.
I have
I've always known my father likes this since I was born, although there were times when I had seen his moustache short. My dad is famous for his moustache, and we're proud of him.
Ahmed admits his moustache troubles him while working on the farm or trying to sleep, but to avoid the trouble, he either ties it from behind or stuffs it under his clothes. The 73-year-old man is not planning to get rid of his facial hair, which he hasn't trimmed since 1994. He seems to be enjoying the ride of fame as people stop him on the streets to take selfies with him.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
According to tracking service FlightAware, over Memorial Day weekend, there were more than 2,800 cancellations and 20,644 delays among U.S. airlines. The experts see that as an early indicator of a turbulent summer travel season because of a pilot shortage, because of increased consumer demand and a recent rise in fuel prices, and disagreements over which COVID-19 restrictions should remain in place. We now present you an article written by Eric Berger. The piece is titled Pilot Shortages, Fuel Prices and COVID, US Braces for Travel Chaos. On Friday night, 10th of June, Laura Waring needed to fly from Newark, New Jersey to San Diego, California to help set up her healthcare information technology company's conference, which was scheduled to start in the coming days. But after her flight was repeatedly delayed and then cancelled, Laura Waring slept for about 45 minutes on a cot at Newark Airport before she woke up cold and uncertain how she would get to California. That was just the start of her troubles. And according to travel industry experts, Laura Waring's experience will likely not be unique among people flying in the coming months. According to tracking service FlightAware, over Memorial Day weekend, there were more than 2,800 cancellations and 20,644 delays among U.S. airlines. The experts see that as an early indicator of a turbulent summer travel season ahead because of a pilot shortage, because of increased consumer demand and a recent rise in fuel prices, and because of disagreements over which COVID-19 restrictions should remain in place. Matthew Howe, senior manager of travel intelligence at Morning Consult, a market research firm, said, "We're really seeing revenge travel. People having had 2 years of pent-up demand and wanting to go out and travel. On the flip side, I think we have seen that some airlines may be struggling to meet the demand." According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, the number of airline pilots and engineers decreased from 84,520 in May of 2019 to 81,310 in May of 2021, an almost 4% decrease. And according to the Bureau, the country will need more than 14,000 new pilots each year for the next decade. The Regional Airline Association a trade group, stated in its 2021 annual report. Workforce shortages predating the pandemic have been accelerated, particularly for technicians and for pilots, who have long been entering the career in fewer numbers than those retiring. According to Michael Taylor, practice lead for travel intelligence at JD Power, a consumer research firm, the shortage means people seeking to travel this summer will likely face fewer options than before the pandemic. For example, before the pandemic, airlines may have had departures every hour for major hubs like Chicago and Atlanta, Georgia. He said now they will only happen every 90 minutes and the planes will be busier. Michael Taylor said the airlines are going to be redeploying a larger fleet with fewer city destinations in their flight system. Michael Taylor explained fewer flights and a shortage of staff translates into less slack in the system. Whereas before the pandemic, an airline may have had crews at an airport on standby in case of an unexpected event, airlines aren't doing that as much because they need those staff on flights. Then when a storm hits and delays a flight, there may not be substitutes for the scheduled crew members, who the Federal Aviation Administration, FAA, only allows to fly a certain number of hours each day. Dennis Tadger, a spokesperson for Allied Pilots Association, the Union for American Airline Pilots, said the airline is loading up pilots' schedules to the absolute maximum. Tadger said, when you build a schedule with very little buffer because you have disproportionately assigned your pilots reserve duty, it's very expensive and it's very ineffective and it ultimately leads to a less reliable operation. Airlines are adjusting to the new challenges. Delta Airlines announced on 26th of May that it would cancel 100 daily flights from 1st of July to 7th of August, around the US and Latin America. Alison Orsband, Delta Airlines' Chief Customer Experience Officer, said in the announcement, "More than any time in our history, the various factors currently impacting our operation, weather and air traffic control, vendor staffing, increased COVID case rates contributing to higher than planned unscheduled absences in some work groups, are resulting in an operation that isn't consistently up to the standards that Delta Airlines has set for the industry in recent years." Alicia Johnson, a 28-year-old mental health therapist, was scheduled to fly back to Detroit, Michigan from Minneapolis, Minnesota when her cousin's Memorial Day weekend wedding, when she received a notification on Sunday morning, 12th of June, that her Monday morning flight had been cancelled. She was rebooked for 1 3 hours later. Alicia Johnson, who lives in Ann Arbor, Michigan, said, "It just added stress to us having to rearrange transportation, but also having backup plans on what would happen if that one also got cancelled or if they overbooked it." She and her fiancé decided not to make the same trip with Delta Airlines for another wedding in July. "It wasn't just because of the cancellation." Alicia Johnson also flew in April shortly after the federal government lifted its mask mandate for people on airlines. She continued to wear her face mask because of family members with autoimmune disorders. During the flight, she felt like the Delta airline crew was celebrating the end of the masking requirement. Taylor said, "People still want people to wear face masks. You go to any airport and they have the overhead announcements, you should be wearing a mask, and you look around and about half the people are wearing masks."